ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
I am not these bubblegum dudes you're talking to.
Pedro Fernandez.
He will be mine in round nine, and if he makes me sore, I'll cut it to four.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. Often imitated, but never duplicated. 37, make that 38 plus years now of knocking out all bums. Who am I? My name is Pedro Fernandez. I am your ever so modest host. I'm also a four-time Golden Glove champion, was ranked nationally as an amateur, and I'm an award-winning boxing writer. So supposedly, allegedly, I should know a little bit about boxing. But guess what? I've always found out the average fan knows a little bit more. So at the top of each hour, I open up the toll-free for you, the fan. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. That's the toll-free listener line. Of course, you can hit us up on the text line. You can text us here in the studio. Of course, the no guilt, no problems, no discreet. You know, say what you want. I don't care. You want to rip me, you can. Do it in the way of text, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. We're going to go back in time today, spend some time with Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali. Go back and spend some time with the man that inspired the Rocky movie, Chuck Wepner. That's right, Chuck Wepner will be here. We'll also spend some time with McLean Stevenson. Who is he? Most people know he was on the MASH TV series, but he did this night show, and one night, guess who showed up? Cassius Clay. So Cassius Clay and McLean Stevenson and more today on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Once again, open phone lines all around the planet, 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. And of course, the guilt-free, no-commitment text line, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. Tower of Power, you're still a young man to the break. Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
He is the greatest fighter of all times next to me.
My mother said it's not bragging when you're telling the truth. Turns out she stole that line from Muhammad Ali. Another line she stole, I think she stole it from like Betty Davis or something like that. Getting old ain't for sissies. I remember my mom telling me that like a long time ago. Anyway, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. My name is Pedro Fernandez. If you are joining us for the very first time, let me welcome you to the Ring Talk world. If you've been here with me for 37, 38 plus years now, you know what time it is. Straight up, let's talk about the fights last night. Of course, on Fox Sports, coming to us from Bakersfield, California, the Mechanics Bank Arena. Pretty good crowd. 9-0 now. Jose El Rayo Valenzuela scored a tougher-than-expected 10-round unanimous nod over Diner Biero. Came at 22-2, left at 22-3, had a whole lot more experience, but not the talent-wise. One draw on 13 KOs. Points were like way, way, way one-sided. 10 rounds zip on one card, 190, 99, 99, 91 on the other, and 98, 92, meaning if it's 99, 91, just figure, take off the first nine on each time, it's like 9-1 in rounds. Same thing, 98, 92, take off the nine on both firsts, after the, before and after the dash, it's 8-2 in rounds. It was a one-sided fight, no doubt about that. But the kid moves on, and if he can sell a few tickets down there in Bakersfield, more power to him. Now, can he sell tickets like Jake Paul? Oh, imagine that. I am comparing prospects now to a YouTube guy, because he can do it. I'm convinced that he's not going to win the world championship. I'm convinced he's not going to be the next Muhammad Ali. I'm convinced Roberto Duran's got nothing to worry about as far as hands of stone are concerned. Okay. But he sold 14,000 tickets a couple of weeks ago. 14,000 tickets. Me, myself, and I, my best friend Hector Martinez won 6 Golden Gloves between the two of us. Maybe we sold 50 tickets in our career. I mean, you know, you don't sell tickets. People don't buy tickets unless you got something to offer. And it seems like Jake Paul's got something to offer. So 14,000 people showed up for that. He wants to take on Jorge Masvidal now. Masvidal got knocked out in a UFC fight. I mean, knocked out, like, lights out, like he was snoring, like that. I think in his last fight. So he's been off since then. I think he had a 6-month suspension because of the knockout. I mean, it was that severe of a knockout. So they put him on the shelf for 6 months. Masvidal, he wants to take on Masvidal. And that's about his speed, because he's going to go down and get himself an MMA fighter. But Masvidal, I will say this, you may not remember this, but Kimbo Slice, remember that guy that he was the original YouTube guy as far as fighting was concerned. I mean, he was kicking ass in backyards and making money. Hey, Kimbo, come over to your house and kick your ass for $100. I mean, $50, $75, a couple hundred bucks. Then it got to be where he was making some decent money. And before, I think his name was Kevin Ferguson, before he ended up dying from probably steroid use and steroid abuse. He was quite an attraction. He even tried his hand, I think, at professional boxing, didn't he? Anyway, the bottom line is Kimbo and all these guys did the backyard thing along with Jorge Masvidal. So that's when Masvidal sort of got his bones. And, of course, he's beaten some really, really good fighters. He really has. I mean, some people call him the uncrowned champion here and the uncrowned champion there. He might be. But the bottom line is he's had a lot of fights. It's time for him to cash in. It looks like Masvidal will cash in and get the next fight with Jake Paul. As far as Jake Paul is concerned, as I said, once again, he's not going to win the world championships. So all you people freaking out about Muhammad Ali's status and Sugar Ray Leonard and this kind of stuff, you don't have to worry about Jake Paul. He's going to be okay. He's just be an okay fighter. He'll be a good attraction. And guess what? If these other guys want to do it, if they want to put in the work, because he's not doing this, he's not just showing up. I'm telling you, the guy's training. He's legitimately training. I'm not sure, again, he's not going to be an accomplished fighter. I don't think he's going to be the greatest fighter in the history of the world. But he knows how to throw a 1-2. He knows how to throw a jab. He knows distance. And most importantly, with his inexperienced ass, he knows how to hold on. So if you combine all those little traits together, you know what I'm saying, he's going to be okay as far as this YouTube and fighting the guys that he wants to fight and this kind of stuff. Of course, I think Riddick Bowe's talking about coming back now. Riddick Bowe, remember Riddick Bowe? You guys remember when I ridiculed Riddick Bowe, former heavyweight champion of the world, 43-1 as a professional, only lost one fight, I think, was at the Golota fight, and then he won it back or something. Anyway, bottom line is, he was involved in those two fights with Golota, and he lost the fight to Holyfield. He was involved in those two, ugly fights with Golota, neither of which Golota won, but Golota, like, kicked the snot out of him, didn't he? Wasn't that what it was all about? Remember Madison Square Garden, all the Polish went crazy, started a war, a riot, and all kind of good stuff. So anyway, so get this, Riddick Bowe is like, 5-10 years past that, and somehow Tony Holden says it wasn't him, so I got to pull Tony Holden's name out of this. Tony Holden is the class of Oklahoma, no doubt about that, as far as promoters are concerned. He says he didn't promote this, although I'm pretty sure, I sort of remember he did. Anyway, he says no, but Riddick Bowe is going to fight some guy, and the guy's a schmo. I mean, and the guy's got nothing. So Riddick Bowe shows up at the weigh-in, and he never gets on the scale. I'm serious. He's at the weigh-in. He never gets on the scale. And I'm watching him because, you know, I'm going to do the ring announcing, and I'm sitting there going, well, you know, let me watch him. We'll see what he looks like when he pulls off his clothes. Well, he never took off his clothes. He never just robed anyway. Never got on the scale, never robed. So he gets in the ring, and it was like late night, probably about 8:30, 9, 10 o'clock at night. And it was a nice night. It was outdoors. And he walks over to me and says, tell him I weigh 259. I said, say what? He goes, tell him I weigh 259. He was more like 299, okay? So I couldn't tell the crowd he weighed 259. I just skipped his weight and went on. Anyway, now he wants to come back. He wants to add his name to the list of guys coming back and doing exhibitions and things like that. Listen, Riddick's not in good shape. I mean, physically and maybe emotionally as well, because, you know, I mean, the guy wasn't the sharpest guy, wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer. Remember that? He had an eating disorder. Remember this? Hey, Cuddy, remember he had an eating disorder? So he had a kitchen installed in his house, and he announced that on this show from Lake Tahoe. He says to me, he goes, you know, my house is under construction right now. I forget where it was, Atlanta, somewhere back there. And I said, oh, really? He goes, yeah, so tell me about it. He goes, I got a kitchen. Yeah, every house got a kitchen, but I got a kitchen in my bedroom. And I said, say what? He goes, yeah, I got a kitchen in my bedroom. I'm thinking to myself, why would you have a kitchen in your bedroom? So he tells me, why should I have to go downstairs to eat? Riddick Bowe coming back in a couple of weeks, doing some type of pay-per-view exhibition. Good luck on that one. As far as upcoming fights are concerned, of course, the heavyweight champion of the world is in action next year. Next month, we'll talk about Tyson Fury. Rumors this week that he would step aside from the rematch or the third fight with Deontay Wilder and take a penalty in order to take the big fight with Anthony Joshua. I don't know. Joshua's going to go in with a sharpshooter in Oleg Usyk. I think that's a week before Tyson Fury and Wilder hook it up for the third time. So he's going to go in there with a sharpshooter, Oleg Usyk, who's a little bit nutty. That's sort of good. Okay, but he's a former cruiserweight champion, moving up in weight. Two things matter in professional boxing. Size, over and over again. And size is going to be in, no doubt, the champion's advantage here. And that's what Anthony Joshua needs right now, because I think he needs a whole lot of more confidence-building fights. After you get knocked out by big old fat Andy Ruiz, you need confidence builders. I mean a lot of them. I don't mean coming back and beating up on an even fatter Andy Ruiz, because you know Andy didn't have a chance the second time around. Good Lord, man. I mean, he started training camp for the Anthony Joshua rematch at 317 pounds. I want to use the F word there, but I won't. Fudge. Anyway, so get just 317 pounds. So he comes into the fight at 283 pounds, and he expected to be competitive? He never won a minute. Never won a round. Never did nothing. I mean, just showed up and got paid. And everybody's giving him a free ride on that one. I don't get it. I'm not into giving guys free rides. Guess what? You're only as good as your last fight. That was his last fight, so he should be penalized for that. Speaking of last fights, talking about the retirements, of course, later we'll hear from Chuck Wepner, of course, the man, the Bayonne Bleeder. What was his record? 36-14 with a couple of draws. Of course, Sonny Liston was his last fight. Sonny Liston, of course, died in 1970, of course, in his house. New Year's Eve, 1970 and 1971. A lot of controversy in how he died. No controversy in my mind. I'm a former policeman, a licensed private investigator, got 35 years of investigating crime scenes, this and that. I saw one picture of the Sonny Liston death scene, and I knew exactly what happened. His underwear were down around his ankles, and he was naked. And the house was locked from the inside and the outside. Nobody can get in, nobody can get out. Bottom line is, Sonny was in there all by himself. So what I'm trying to tell you is that this aneurysm or whatever that Sonny suffered, okay, sort of brought that on himself. In other words, he came and went at the same time. But Chuck Wepner, we'll talk Chuck Wepner after the break here on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network and Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Joshua looks so tired. I think he wants out.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
Honored to have Chuck Wepner on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, folks. An outstanding heavyweight back in the day, of course, knocked down Muhammad Ali, but we'll get to that. He was the story of the Rocky movies, and now there's a movie all about him. I'm talking about Chuck. So, Chuck Wepner, talk to me about Chuck.
Well, it's a movie that's been a long time in the making, over 11 years. You know, we finally got the right script, and most of all, we got the right actor. We got Liev Schreiber to play me in the movie, and I'm thrilled about that. He's a great actor and a terrific young guy.
Okay, the movie's already in the theaters. It's got rave reviews. Of course, everybody's rocking and rolling, and Hollywood has had a relationship with boxing since the silent movie days. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. They are very enamored with the sport and the sport in the squared circle. Now, before we get back to Chuck just for a second, I got to ask you about my buddy Sylvester Stallone. And the reason why I say my buddy is I interviewed him one time, and he was a bit of a turd. And I'll go into that maybe on another day. But, you know, he stole your story back in 1975 or 1976, and he didn't pay you a dime until 2011. What a dick.
Well, you know, he did the right thing by me. I don't know what your opinion of it is, but he's in my mind, he's a good guy. You know, he tried to put me in Rocky II. He wrote a part in Ching Web. I have the script right here, as a matter of fact. and I had 22 lines, and he called me into Philadelphia to read for the part, and I didn't do well. He even gave me a second chance to read for the part an hour and a half later, and I still didn't do that great. You know, it was one of those things. So time went by, and finally we got together, and we squared away everything, and everything is fine now.
Well, I'm glad that he got straight up with you. Now, I got to bring you back to March 29, 1975, fighting Muhammad Ali. You said it was the greatest experience of your life. When I spent 2 weeks with him over in China, those were the greatest 2 weeks of my life. I mean, there's something about the greatest in great times being around that guy, isn't there?
Yes, he is. We spent a lot of time together because we also did a commentary and a little short film on tooth decay for Washington. So we spent about 4 or 5 days. You're absolutely right. He's a terrific guy, and I cherish that 4 days that we spent with him. It was great. We had a couple of the former president of the United States there, and Ali acted up with him, and he's a peanut farmer.
Jimmy Carter.
And he was on the dais, and he made believe he fell asleep when the president was speaking. And Carter says, "Oh, my God, I must be boring. The champ went to sleep." And he woke up just then, and he introduced Ali, and Ali got up there and talked for 15 minutes. It was great.
Okay. Chuck Wepner is our guest. The movie's Chuck, folks. I'm going to see it this weekend before I do the Saturday night show, so I will have a review on it for Saturday night, the Johnny Taco Show at 10 p.m. Pacific time right here on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. But let's go back to the Ali fight. Knocking him down, did you step on his foot?
No. I hit him with a right hand under the heart. He threw a jab. I slipped it to the right, threw a right hand. If you watch the film, you can see the punch land. Now, That shot of me stepping on his foot, that could have been any time during the fight. They never protested it. Ali took the 8 count, got up, and kept fighting. Drew Gundy Brown came up with a story later on, 2 hours after the fight. But you know what? It's all conjecture, and it was called a knockdown, and it makes good press.
Drew Gundy Brown, the king of BS himself?
Yeah, that was him. Drew was his corner.
Okay, let's go back to the Sun. I knew Sonny Liston's last trainer, Johnny Tocco. Remember Johnny Tocco that ran the gym in Las Vegas? Do you remember him?
No, I heard the name, but no, I didn't know. Yeah, well, he started out in Vegas.
He was Sonny Liston's last trainer, and Davey Pearl, the manager. Of course, he was a referee of Tommy Hearns and Sugar Ray Leonard back in 1981 as well, but. They were of the opinion that Sonny had some issues with the mob when he went back to fight you, and there were rumors that the mob wanted him to lose to you and you and all this kind of stuff. And, gee, is there any truth to that at all, Mr. Wepner?
Well, God, I'll tell you what, if they wanted him to lose, he sure as hell didn't do it, because in that fight they got a broken nose, broken right cheekbone, and 71 stitches. You know, I pressed him the whole fight, and that was my style. As a matter of fact, at the end of the ninth round, Bonnie Felix, the referee, wanted to stop the fight. And I said, "Bonnie, one more round. Let me finish it." He said, "All right, how many fingers do I have up? I said, how many guesses do I get?" You know, I couldn't see nothing. You know, it was they stopped the fight with a minute and 23 seconds to go in the 10th round. And Liston was top guy, biggest puncher I ever fought, and I fought 4 world champions.
No doubt about that. Chuck Wepner is our guest, folks. The movie's Chuck is out at your theaters as I speak. What can people expect out of this movie besides reality? I mean, there's no sugarcoating in this movie, is there? I've been told it's like straight up Chuck.
Yep, it is straight up Chuck, and you're absolutely right. There's no sugarcoating. They expect to see the life and times of the real Chuck Wepner. You know, I inspired Rocky. It was the fight with Ali that inspired it. And but this movie tells the truth. It doesn't pull any punches. And so far we've got a lot of great reviews, not one bad one. And if you go to see the fight, I'm sure you'll come home and be happy that you went.
With that, sir, we say goodbye. We wish you the very best of luck with your movie, Chuck. And, of course, anytime you want to come back to Sports Byline, the red carpet is open for Mr. Chuck Wepner. No doubt about that. The Biome Bleeder. You are a class act in boxing. You're a class act outside of the ring, sir. You're a credit to the human race and the sport of boxing. Thank you for your time and your dedication.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
The great Chuck Wepner on Sports Byline. We take you back to May 2017 for that one. Of course, Chuck and I. Now, Chuck's still rocking and rolling and in decent health. I saw an interview with him about 2 or 3 months ago. Still, you know, still got it going on. There's no doubt about that. As far as the fight with Sonny Liston, 71 stitches. Yeah, that's a lot of stitches. Of course, that's why they called him the Bayonne Bleeder, because he was from Bayonne. That was his town, his city. And, of course, all the cuts. I mean, the guy was just no doubt about it. But he was obviously the subject, the guy that brought Rocky Sylvester Stallone, whatever, Rocky Balboa, of course, to the forefront. That was a character and this kind of stuff. Finally got paid. I thought it was a little bit late. You heard me lean hard on Stallone early in the interview. Of course, Stallone and I had some interactions at the Contender TV show. Of course, remember that? The Contender TV series, I think, ended like in 2004. That was the first one anyway on NBC. And it was a good run. Sugar Ray Leonard was involved with the promotion and the television as well. But you know, so was Sylvester Stallone. And as far as being around that guy, I just didn't enjoy it. Anyway, get this. Manny Pacquiao, I've been saying this for a long, long time. He's going to run for president. I said that like, I don't know. 5-6 years ago, because you know, he realized the popularity he had. Plus, he was already a congressman, but when he won the congressional seat, I believe he went to his wife's hometown, which was a smaller province than where he lived, and that's where he was elected. And of course, then he became senator, and now he says he's going to run for president. He says, "quote I boldly accept the challenge of running for president of the Philippines. We need progress. We need to win against poverty. We need our government to serve our people with integrity, compassion, and transparency. The time is now." I am ready to rise to the challenge of leadership. The election is in May. Manny Pacquiao, watch your ass. I'm telling you just like that. You are a marked man. Larry Merchant says, no way that Duarte, the president over there in the Philippines, is going to kill Manny Pacquiao. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's no way that Ferdinand Marcos was going to kill Ninoy Aquino as he took that one step off the airplane from San Francisco. He was the president in exile, the leader of the people in exile of the Philippines, okay? So when he came back to challenge Marcos, he took one step. His right foot hit the concrete on the airport floor, and they shot him. His second foot never hit the floor. He was shot before he got basically got on the ground. So that was the end of that run. That was Marcos's big challenge. This is going to be Duarte's big challenge. Of course, Duarte is pro cops, I guess, and I'm an ex-cop, but I don't know. No, he's a terrorist. I mean, dropping people out of airplanes for dealing drugs and this and that. I guess we'd have to drop a lot of people out of planes here in San Francisco to have that kind of justice. I mean, holy cow, man, you gotta be kidding me. Anyway, but he drops people out of airplanes and he shoots people on the street and that kind of good stuff. If you're a suspected dealer, you don't get a trial, they kill you and that kind of, yeah, that's going over well with some of the Filipino people, believe it or not. Some of the Filipino people I've talked to, they're down with that. They think that something's got to be done, that something radical's got to be done, and this is radical enough for them. As long as they don't get shot, as long as their rights aren't being taken away, they don't care. But yeah, this Duarte is big time. He's a hard, hard dude, no doubt about that. And him and Manny Pacquiao are going to run against each other in May of 2022, which I think will be a probably a win for the Pac-Man if he can get that far. I remember when, I'm bringing you back in history a little bit, Bobby Kennedy was meeting with somebody, and they told Bobby Kennedy, guess what, there's a plot against your life. And he says, oh, I don't believe it. Get out of here. And 2 months later, he was dead. So, I mean, you know, you run against tough people like that. It's like Duarte. Things happen. Open phone lines all around the planet. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Later in the show, we've got 2 hours today. We'll bring in Flip Wilson, spent some time with Flip Wilson and Muhammad Ali. Of course, Muhammad Ali, then he was Cassius Clay. And we'll also spend some time with The Tonight Show, Ali on The Tonight Show. So we'll have some fun with Muhammad Ali in this 2-hour show edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC-TV. In a busy
world. And if we cannot end now our differences, at least we can help make the world safe for diversity. For in the final analysis, our most basic common link is that we all inhabit this small planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's futures. And we are all mortal.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council. Of my special angel, will I ever find the love?
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, checking your inside look into the world of boxing and mixed martial arts. You know, over the years, the 90-year-old wire-haired wonder, I'm talking about Mr. Don King himself, source, former Cleveland numbers runner. Actually, he wasn't a runner. He was a runner originally, but he became the man in Cleveland. What I mean by the man, in other words, he was like the mafia, except he said he wasn't with the mafia. He said they don't let N guys in the mafia. That's what he told me. Bottom line is, Don King, they almost put a hit out on him. In fact, let's check this out. We'll go into this in depth when we hear a clip from Sammy the Bull Gravano right now.
Boxing, gambling. Did you guys ever do anything with Don King? Any contacts with Don King?
Yes. I went in front of a grand jury. I was subpoenaed in front of a grand jury for boxing. When I was there, I was out with John Gotti. Mike Tyson was the Now, I had another guy, and I can't think of his name. I knew the trainer, and I knew the black guy. I was training in the gym with him occasionally. He was a tough fighter, and he was a little bit over the hill. So I thought of a thing to set up a fight. I wanted him, and someday I'll get the name. I can't remember right now. But I'll get him to fight the champ in Italy. The champ in Italy was with two brothers who were both made guys in the mob. So I'm reaching them through the Italian people. I want this guy to come in and fight my guy, the black guy. And my guy will win, so he gets your belt. So if he wins and he has your belt, I want to hook up a fight with Mike Tyson, and I want big money because it's a championship. He's got a belt, you got a belt. The numbers are bigger. We know that Mike could probably beat you. Now, if the people around Mike want to make him duck a fight, I don't think he would do that, but then it's another story, but we never got that far. The Italian guy had to come here and fight a lesser opponent first before he fought my guy. And he lost to that guy. So now the thing is off. But in the process of all of this, John knows what's going on. I have a guy, a street guy, can't even think of his name, but he's going to Don King talking about a potential fight. He's not having a lot of luck. Don King stands up. He don't want it, no part of this thing. He mentions John Gotti, this, that. I'm a tough guy. I went to jail for this and that. John, I'm not doing any of that bullshit. So the kid comes back and tells me. So I said, John, forget the whole thing now. It ain't going to work. He won't do it. Don King won't do what we want. Did you tell him to mention my name? Yeah, I did. He don't want to be bothered. He said he's a tough guy. He did time. Really? Yeah. Tell the kid to go back, make another appointment, and kill him. You want me to kill Don King? No, not you. The kid, this guy. You want me to tell this kid to go back and kill Don King? Yeah, well, hit him with a proposal. If he says no, take a gun out and shoot him. All right. That's what you want? Yeah. All right. I grabbed the kid. He was in the kid. He's a guy, you know. It was tough. Listen, you're going to go, you're going to hit him with this proposal. If he says no and gives you that shit, I'm a tough guy. Take the gun out and shoot him. Shoot him in the head. Kill him. You want me to kill Don King? I said, it's not me. John wants you to kill him. What do you want me to tell you? You got to kill him. He took off. The kid took off. I'd never seen hide a hair of him again. He must have left the country. I don't know where the f*** he went. He took off. So we never went after Don King because I didn't want. I'm definitely not going after him because this is insane now. We're hitting the guy because he don't want to do a deal. We'll be hitting guys every other week.
Sammy the Bull Gravano laying the truth out there on Don King, of course, in his alleged mob ties. Bottom line is the John that he kept mentioning was John Gotti. And, of course, everybody knows who the Teflon Don is. Of course, he died a few years ago in prison where he deserved to be. But the bottom line is the heavyweight they kept talking about throughout this was Francisco Damiani. He was born in 1958. I think he was at one point the WBO heavyweight title holder. He did very well as far as the silver game, the Los Angeles Olympics were concerned. I think he got the silver medal in the 84 Olympics. Anyway, he was 30-2 with 24 KOs. Not a bad record, huh? Not a bad record at all. But the bottom line is he was going to beat none of the big guys, especially people like Mike Tyson. But Sammy the Bull Gravano putting a hit out on John Gotti wanted to put a hit out on Don King. I think that I shouldn't be laughing about this because it's serious. I mean, Gotti was serious about this. Obviously, Gravano didn't take it all that serious. And the kid that he tried to get to do this allocated, said, you got to go do this. He said, I'm not going to go do it. Bottom line is, smart kid, no doubt about that. Whacking Don King, man. That would have been something. Imagine that, being told by a mafia don that you have to go kill Don King. Is that like a no? It's like, what do you do? Do you tell the mafia no? You tell the mafia no, they kill you. You go kill Don King, you probably get killed. You know, so it's like you're going to die either way. So what's going to go on? Anyway, bottom line is the kid did do it. Don King celebrated his 90th birthday on August 20th, 2021. More power to him. He says he's promoting still. His daughter, Debbie King, of course, says that she's a smart lady. She's got a doctorate, I believe. Anyway, she said she was put together the training camp back in Orwell, Ohio, and this and that, outside of Cleveland. They had a nice training camp, and she was going to put that back together and get fighters to go and this and that. That was about 8-10 months ago. I haven't heard too much from them as far as progress is concerned. Do I think that Don King can come back? He's 90 years old. I don't think so. The fact we haven't seen him on TV in a long time, the fact we haven't seen any public presentations of him, the fact that I can't get him on the phone, the fact that other people, everybody else says they're talking to him all the time. That's when and they all come up with the same line. Oh, I talk to him once a week. Oh, I talk to him once a week. I'm serious. I've asked 10 people, maybe more than that in the last couple of months. Hey, you talking to him? Yeah, I talk to him once a week. I'm saying to myself, so if you talk to him once a week, why is a wire-haired wonder not taking my phone calls? What did I do? Did I like pour pee in his coke or something like that? I have no idea. Anyway, I guess at 90 years old, he talks to who he wants to talk to, if he's still talking. See, and that's the question I have. Is he able to really be Don King anymore? He's 90 years old. People decline. You know what I mean? The retired HBO godfather, Larry Merchant, God knows what laryngitis did to him. He's going to be 91 in March. But, you know, laryngitis took him off the air here. He was here a couple of weeks ago. We hope to have him on next week. But, wow. I mean, when you get to be 90 years old, things can happen. Things can happen quick. Peyton Scherer. Of course, he was the guy that put together the upset of Julio Cesar Chavez by Frankie Randall and the upset of Mike Tyson by Buster Douglas. I kid you not. It's not these other guys. It's Peyton Scherer. Peyton Scherer did it. So Peyton Scherer was like 87, 88, maybe 89 years old. And I'm calling Peyton every few weeks. I'm calling him every few weeks to check in with him and this and that because we were tight. He was a good guy. No doubt about it. He really treated me like gold over the years on the road, wherever we went. When he was working for Don King, he just treated me like gold. No doubt about that. So anyway, I called Peyton one day and Peyton's fine. I called back 3 days later and Peyton's gone. 90 years old. People go quickly. Anyway, the wire-haired wonder, Don King, says he's still got a couple of fighters. We'll see if he ever does anything as far as the future is concerned. I think he's retired. I think he's done his thing. I mean, what could he do? What could he ever do that could eclipse with maybe his first event? And maybe he's the only guy in business to come out with your first gig. That's like your first record. It's like he was a movie star, a musician, and came out with his first record, of course, The Rumble in the Jungle, the big Ali Foreman fight down there in Zaire, Africa. Of course, that was his coming out party, and it was a big success as far as money was concerned, a success for everybody but the host country. Of course, that was Zaire, Africa at that point in time. I think it's called the Congo now, but President Mobutu invested $6 million in the fight, and that bankrupted the country. But of course, you know, Don King had convinced him that, you know, Zaire would become like, you know, Las Vegas or the French Riviera or Paris or London or something like that. Wasn't happening. That was one of Don. Hey, you talk about one of Don's biggest cons. That was it. When he conned Mobutu out of $6 million by convincing him that people were going to come in mass to see Muhammad Ali and George Foreman fight in the jungle, that wasn't happening. The media people I know that went over there, they weren't going. In fact, what was it? Well, Larry Merchant went over there, and the fight was canceled. I know it wasn't canceled. It was postponed. George Foreman got cut. And then George Foreman tried to get out of the country, and then Mobutu said, no, you're not going anywhere. He took his passport. He basically told him, if you go to the airport, you know, I'm going to have guys with guns there. So George didn't even bother to split. George or his German Shepherd dogs didn't even bother to split. So they let the cut heal. George let the cut heal because George wasn't going back to Africa. Those people in Africa were cheating George like he was a bad guy. I wonder where I'm trying to come up with a selective word there. But they didn't like him. They thought he was like the Uncle Tom of Uncle Tom's. The fact that he brought German Shepherds with him to Africa. And in Africa, the only one that had German Shepherds, well, get this, the slave owners. So if you see a guy get off a plane, he's supposed to be the heavyweight champion of the world. He gets off the plane and he's followed by German shepherds. And you're black and living in Africa, you're sort of thinking, whoa, this guy's probably not one of us. So anyway, that's why they say, Ali Boumaye, Ali Boumaye, all throughout the fight, Ali Boumaye, and that meant, I want to kill Ali, Ali, kill him. But the bottom line is, at the end of the night, it was a good fight as far as the international pay-per-view was concerned. I mean, the pay-per-view, the closed-circuit television back then, of course, we watched fights in various auditoriums and theaters and gymnasiums and things like that. Of course, the fights were on big screens because the fight was in, obviously, in Africa. But it was a success from that point of view. But the live gate, now, Mobutu took it in his shorts, and I think a couple years later he was done as far as being president was concerned. Now, later in the show, we'll spend some time with a guy that I love. I mean, the time that I got to spend around Muhammad Ali was like precious. It was just absolutely precious. And I remember almost every waking moment. I mean, I can't remember every waking moment with anybody else, but I can remember almost every waking moment with him. And that's just the way it was. We spent the 2 weeks over in Asia, went to Buenos Aires one time, saw him in Europe, of course, spent some time in Puerto Rico, but each time in Las Vegas, but each time I was around Ali, each and every time I was around him, I can go back and like, I could run that through my head, and it's like a film, like an old newsreel film, as I said, the airports, the hotels, this, meeting him first, meeting him then, meeting him first for this trip, meeting his wife for this trip, this going on, this, I mean, it's just like all these little things going back and forth in my brain here as far as Muhammad Ali and I traveling on the road. And, you know, I was fortunate. I was. I mean, I remember when Harold Smith came to me, the late Harold Smith, born Ross Fields. But when he came to me, he said to me, I want you to be Ali's PR guy for a tour through Asia. And I said, okay. He goes, but you also got to be his bodyguard because we're not going to bring any security. He goes, you're an ex-cop. He goes, and I expect you to do the old bodyguard routine as well. So, you know, the PR thing, all I got to do is get up there and say a few words. Golly gee whiz, welcome to, where are we? Welcome to Manila, or wherever the hell we happen to be, Beijing. Okay, Beijing, welcome to Beijing. But the bottom line is, all I do is say a few words, right? And then Ali would say a couple of words, this and that, and then basically it was over with. But at the end of the day, the fact that he only spoke briefly, and it was very, I won't say abrupt, but it was very short. I mean, he had issues as far as speech was concerned from the Parkinson's disease and boxing as well, the residual effects of professional boxing, but Parkinson's disease as well. The Parkinson's disease was bad. In fact, it was so bad that at times when we were in China, he didn't want to take his medicine. And because if he took his medicine, his hands stopped shaking. I mean, obviously you guys saw him when he was in Beijing for 1996, I think, for the Olympics, when his hands were shaking, when he did the torch thing, his hands were shaking. Well, if he doesn't take his medication, his hands shake like that. But if he does take his medication, it reduces the handshakes, but it reduces his intellectual abilities as well. He can't converse, he can't talk, he really can't think all that well. He's like, So he didn't want to be like a drone, basically. He didn't want to be a drone, so he wouldn't take his medication. And I would ask his wife, what's up with Muhammad today? She goes, he's shaking a little bit. Yeah, Pedro, he don't want to take his medication. You know, he didn't want to take it because of the side effects, not because of the effect of the medicine itself. The prescribed effect was it would stop the shakes, but it also stopped him from thinking. So straight up, that's Muhammad Ali up close. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Tower to the break.
It has been said that I have two alternatives. Either go to jail or go to the army.
I'm only bold and cocky before and after fight. Let me see you close your mouth and just keep it closed.
Well, you know that's impossible.
No, now keep it closed.
You know that's impossible. I'm the greatest. And I'm knocking out all bones. And if you get too smart, I'll knock you out.
High school.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
I was even the captain of the football team. How could this happen?
How could this happen to me?
Partly the reason I...
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Pedro, I appreciate it. It's a prayer for me, buddy. And if there's anything I can do for you anytime, you let me know.
The great Johnny Tapia is saying, say a prayer for him. Johnny was an emotionally fragile guy. That's the best way I can put it. He was fragile. I mean, sometimes he was the nicest, sweetest teddy bear in the entire world. Other times he was like evil. I mean, that's just the way I am. It was a Jekyll and Hyde to Johnny Tappy. No doubt about that. I want to thank Value Entertainment for that Sammy Gravano, talking about putting the hit out on Don King. No doubt about that. Of course, Sammy the Bull, the John Gotti, snitch. I mean, that's how he's basically out on the street because he ratted on John Gotti. Of course, this is a guy that killed lots of people, double-digit people. I can't understand how these mob guys can. I don't get it. I'm an ex-cop, so I got a problem with like mob guys getting on the air and talking about killing people and being able to boast about killing people in the past. I don't get off on that because, you know, for each person you killed, that impacted a whole lot of people more than the one person you killed. So Sammy the Bull Gravano, if they say karma's for real, you should be dead and you're still alive. So I don't know what's happening. Hour number two of Ring Talk Live, worldwide forthcoming. Of course, I told you I would bring you some young Cassius Clay. So Muhammad Ali will deal with that. Of course, in hour number two, of course, Muhammad Ali on the Tonight Show, Cassius Clay on the Tonight Show, and Flip Wilson and Muhammad Ali. Actually, not Flip Wilson. Put it this way. We'll talk about it after the break. Don't forget, Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. Of course, brought to you by the World Boxing Council. You can check out the WBC at their interactive website at WBCboxing.com. We are carried in part by Vive TV. We'll talk about that in depth, of course. Twitch.tv, the sports file on USA Channel, carries us live as far as the video is concerned. Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific time. Forthcoming after the news. And please don't listen to the news. We go with hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV live right here on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 217, and like 1,000 other internet platforms. Straight up, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Stay tuned. Hour number two after the news.